Okay,
I like doing segment four. You start off.
Hey, I'm Dave Champion. This is my co-host Bill Carnes, and together we are totally unprepared. All right, before we get into anything serious,
I think I'm going to figure out what key our opener is in, and I might do like an opening, like guitar riff over the opening, over the holidays, perhaps.
That'd be nice. That'd be fun.
We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see what the outcome is.
Yeah.
You guys can vote on that one. All right. frivolity.
Okay. See.
There has been a perception in society forever that people who use profanity often, that would, of course, not be me.
I did heavy lifting a couple weeks ago.
You did. You pitched in. That they have something psychologists refer to as the language poverty. In other words, the theory is, and of course probably a great many of the people watching believe this is true, because it seems to be one of these many societal myths, is that people swear because they don't have other words to use. Their vocabulary is so limited, they have to rely on profanity.
Okay? And that's bullshit.
Yes, it is. And I'm just watching, there he goes. Out comes the paper and the pen to note down the time that he has to beep. All right. But a team of psychologists did a test where they proved scientifically that that is not true, that actually people who use profanity often and well have a larger vocabulary than people who don't.
Abso-fucking-lutely. I cannot agree more. Keep pushing the button in there, Mr. Engineer, man. This is a great segment. It's interesting because there are so many curse words out there.
Yeah.
That obviously you have many, many, many descriptive words at your vocabulary disposal, if you will, that others don't. And of course, we have other words that we can use as well, but we like to throw those in there. So, I mean, I think it's a matter of actual intellectual superiority over those stupid bastards.
Yes, and there has been other research done showing that people who use profanity are actually more forthright. Now, see, that to me makes sense on its face. The first one, okay, I understand it took some research to prove that people who use profanity have larger vocabularies. But to me, the fact that people swear are more forthright does not surprise me in the least, because people who refrain from swearing often do so because it's a matter of image. They want to be perceived a particular way. People who want to be perceived a particular way aren't just going to trim up their language. They're going to trim up the content of their speech so that they're not unpopular in any way.
Sure.
Where the person who says, I don't care what the hell you think of me. I'm going to swear. I'm going to tell you what I think. You know, I'm going to be me. And if you don't like it, you can go pound sand. Right? To me, that made intuitive sense right off the bat. But the other one...
And you'll notice that in business and politics, you get people that are up there talking about one thing or another, and of course they won't curse. And I got to tell you, we're going to talk a little bit about the debate in a little bit, but I watched the first half of it last night. I had to go do some stuff. I watched the last half of it this morning. And I am at a number of different spots. I saw an excellent opportunity for anyone who was in the debate getting attacked by someone else to just really lay it out there in front of everybody in the nation. Say, you know, it is asshole statements like that that cause people to understand what a horrible candidate you are. And, you know, things like that I think would really grab a lot of attention. And maybe there is some occasion for that, even in politics.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, there was a commentator just a week or so ago, I was reading an article, where he was basically making that same point that being brusque and perhaps using profanity and calling a spade rather than being all diplomatic about it as politicians like to do, right? What do they do in the Congress or the Senate? Well, somebody that they heard somebody say something that they find appalling and they can't even tolerate the guy. And they say, well, my esteemed colleague from the state of Minnesota, right?
Gentleman,
You know, and they were saying some bluntness, some perhaps even profanity at key moments would rivet the attention on the point being made rather than this endless droning on
politically
correct
speech.
Concentrating
on the words and not the message. Stacey Dash, who you might remember as an actress. She was in Airheads. I don't know what it was. Anyhow, she's been an actress, and she is been a member of Outnumbered, which is a morning Fox program that has a number of women that sit on the panel. They bring in one man who's outnumbered, and they talk about events of the day. And they were talking about Obama.
Is this a show on the air right now?
Yeah, it's on Fox.
How do I get on this show?
It was it was on the first part of last week. She got a 2-week suspension for saying that Barack Obama doesn't give a shit about this, and they believe it. You heard the shit, and then she stopped. She goes, doesn't give a damn about any of this. She got 2 weeks off for using the word shit, which is stupid. And then, of course, the other guy who was on Fox, I think the night before, no, it was that same day, he said, he referred to Barack Obama as a total pussy.
I heard that.
And he was like a guest expert in a field sort of a thing. He's not actually a member of the news team. He's not an anchor or anything.
They can't
give him 2 weeks off. Yeah, we're not going to call you up for 2 weeks to come on here. Which, again, it's ridiculous. Like, you know what? You're Fox News. You're supposed to be leading the way. Allow this.
Well, not only that, you're old enough to remember this. The justification for the networks taking that sort of path used to be, we can't do it, the FCC will punish us.
Which
right?
is not the case.
Not anymore, no. Right? The United States Supreme Court, in a series of cases probably close to a decade ago now, gutted the FCC of that authority. They don't have it anymore, basically.
And it all stemmed from what? It all stemmed from Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction.
Well,
when Justin Timberlake quite obviously ripped what she was wearing off and exposed one of her breasts during the halftime show of the Super Bowl. That's what started this whole thing. That's when the FCC really started hammering down. It ended up going to Supreme Court. Supreme Court gutted their authority.
Well, some of these decisions concerning language were before that. But basically what the Supreme Court said is, look, you know, you guys on the FCC, there's like 70 of you guys sitting here, okay? We've got 320 million Americans. You don't get to decide what is acceptable for 320 million Americans to decide. And we're not stuck anymore with channels 2, 4, 5, 7, right? We now have 9,000 different channels to choose from. If somebody doesn't like it, they can turn it off. You seven guys don't get to say anymore when it comes to what is acceptable. And I read a group of attorneys that represents the entertainment industry, they wrote a position paper about 3 years ago, basically summarizing all the court decisions and saying, okay, when we distill it down to what the practical level, which you can and cannot do, they said, Noah, get ready. They said, you should be judicious about when you say fuck. Okay. So you should, you know, like you want to shoot a buck, very similar. You should be judicious.
You should be judicious
when you say that the FCC might have some game if you said that at like 7 o'clock prime time when the kids are watching. You should absolutely not say mother bucker. Okay. That was with a B, not an F. And they said, other than that, you're golden for anything. And they said really what the Supreme Court said was it goes down to the intent. So for instance, if the intent is to shock, then there might be some question. But if it's in the flow of presentation, you know, it's a movie about the mafia and the guy says, hey, you motherfucker, okay, that can't be censored if it's shown on television because it's part and parcel of the presentation. But if you just sat down, you and I just sat down here, looked at the camera and just started swearing, that might be actionable by the FCC. So basically 99% of the usage, their authority's gone.
It's interesting, too, because now you get movies that we've all seen for years that have been altered and bleeped and that now necessarily don't. You might get the original version on there with commercials thrown in. We got about 3 or 4 minutes left before the break.
One more comment before we go there.
Okay.
Here on this station, as a matter of fact, there's nothing stopping the kind of language we use on the show, according to the FCC, but the owner, we're in a small town, an older population, sort of a retirement place, the owner of the station has decided certain words he suspects his audience would not appreciate, which is why you get beeped. The difference between policy versus law.
Yeah, so those of you who watch us locally on KPVM, you get the beeped version. If you want to hear the unfiltered version, you have to go to totallyunprepared.info, and then you can, oh, hey, look at that, right on top of it. Thank you, Noah. My finger went off screen. Thing you know. You can actually see it with the unfiltered words.
Or you can email Vern Van Winkle and tell him, hey, stop that censorship stuff. I just canned myself right there. I'm going to get a two-week suspension.
let's talk a little bit about the debate. We got a couple minutes left here. That was just Tuesday night was the last presidential debate for this year scheduled. And I have to tell you, my thoughts on it were you had, with one exception, everybody on both stages, both the big kid stage and the little kid stage, that were saying spend more money on war that should be increased, including boots on the ground, to various levels of death and destruction in the Middle East, and continue to try to change governments and hearts and minds there by force, and throw us deeper in debt and make us a big militarized nation that has a big stick and we're willing to beat anybody with it.
Not make us. Continue on.
Well, and make the stick even bigger.
Right, right.
And smack even harder. And there was only one candidate on the stage that said, no. We're too far in debt as it is. We've been meddling there for far too long. Okay, we've been our own worst enemy.
First statement, true.
Yeah.
Second statement, true.
Yeah, and that we need to back off of there and allow these people to repair themselves and allow anybody who's in the area that doesn't like Islamic fundamentalist spreading physically and taking over by force, they need to put their own boots on the ground to try to curtail it,
not rely on
us.
Right.
And Rand Paul was the only one speaking that message. And I got to tell you, I cannot stand the idea of the debt. I want to talk to you about the $1 trillion coin idea, what we emailed about a couple days ago. We'll do that a little later. But I don't like the idea of debt. I can't stand the idea of more war. 1.2 million civilians in Iraq alone have been killed in the last 13 years. And collateral damage, 1.3 million? You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
I think that's about the size of Daytona Beach, Florida. Maybe even more than that.
When you think about it, 1.2 million dead civilians who, remember, Iraq never did anything to the U.S., ever.
No.
And we killed 1.2 million of their civilians. I believe that's called genocide. I know Americans don't like to hear that because we're supposed to be the good guys. I don't see another way to play it.
Yeah. And I'll talk a little bit more about the idealism behind all of this during my rant segment. It's going to be kind of interesting. I take a little bit different position, but hopefully people will actually be able to see, just by turning the tables a little bit, maybe understanding both sides of the coin here and seeing where we need real change.
Yeah, and I think what you're about to talk about is something that people really need to hear as you're going into the election cycle.
Let's hope so. We'll be right back with Dave's rant.
We are back, and now it's time for What is Up with Barack Obama? Could it be that he is the absolute worst president to ever sit in the Oval Office? Let's talk about a couple of things that people constantly condemn Obama over and make the point that he is probably the worst president ever. First of all, repeated acts of violating the Constitution. Who would, in their right mind, would want or think a president, want a president or think a president is good who violates the Constitution? Quite an apt criticism for any president. Remember when the FCC was having those sort of almost secret hearings where they were discussing whether they were going to release regulations on so they would regulate the internet? And oh my God, everybody screamed bloody murder and said, no, the government can't regulate the internet. Are you kidding me? The internet is sort of the epitome of freedom where you can get information from sources near and wide. We don't do that. And especially people on the right, no, we can't have the government regulating the internet. And then, of course, goes without saying, nationalized health care. There's nothing to condemn Obama about greater than, I suppose, Obamacare. And let's talk about the fact that he wanted to get rid of assault weapons, right? Now, he hasn't done anything. Let's be clear. He hasn't done anything to do that. However, if he wasn't constrained by law, I think we all know he'd be out there sending the government to take all of the assault weapons away because he hates them. And he's made statements to that effect numerous times. And, of course, the U.S. is not at war with Islam. All right. So that's the criticism of Barack Obama. Now, by the way, I should tell you the quote, the U.S. is not at war with Islam. That is a George Bush quote. Now, I say all of these things about Barack Obama because I'm sure the people on the right who are watching this show, every single thing I mention, they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know who believes that stuff? Donald Trump wants to do the same thing. Let me give you an example. I have notes. I have to admit, I violated the show's content. I am somewhat prepared today. Okay. He wants to regulate the internet. Now, the big claim of his supporters, which is a lie, is that, well, it's just because of terrorism. Okay. First of all. And of course, last night, Trump tried to clean up his statement a little bit. But however, if it was only a matter of shutting down foreign internet sites that are considered, I don't know what somebody else's point of view, they want people to commit terrorism. If it was just a matter of shutting those down, the NSA could have done that long ago, okay? Now, what do we know about those websites? Well, I'll tell you this. A group of hackers just identified 3 ISIS Twitter accounts as going back to the British government's computers. That should give you an idea why these things haven't been shut down, okay, if you've got your eyes open. Also, nationalized health care. Oh, let me stick on regulation. By the way, the other thing that Trump said, which makes it clear it's not just about stopping terrorists, is that he said in the same breath, talking about closing up the internet. That was his characterization. I'm going to go talk to Bill Gates about closing up the internet. He said, because we're losing our children to the internet. Okay? Nothing to do with Muslims there. He's basically saying, if I don't think it's a good idea, I should go to Bill Gates. We should find out how the government is going to tell you and your children and everybody else in America what you can and cannot see on the internet. The same exact thing that the people on the right screamed when the FCC was considering regulating the internet, because it's Obama's administration, right? But if it's a Republican who wants to do the exact same BS, yay, let's regulate the internet. Now, nationalized health care, Barack Obama, Obamacare, right? Guess who also supports single-payer nationalized health care? Yeah, Donald Trump. The guy you excoriate Obama for it, you love Donald Trump for it. And, of course, Donald Trump has also come out and said he believes assault weapons should be banned in America. Now, he has reversed himself now that he's running for president because he's running as a Republican. But don't be fooled. When he changes it for convenience sake as he's running for office, you know that his first thing that he wrote when he wasn't running for office is what he really feels. He doesn't support the freedom of American to have all sorts of weapons, most especially the kind the Second Amendment was devised to ensure the safety of. Now,
wait, Dave, wasn't he a registered Democrat when he wrote that book?
Yes. From 2000 to 2010, all but one of those years, for 9-plus years, he was a registered Democrat. Now he's the savior. He is the Jesus Christ of the Republican Party. Now, also, we talked about Barack Obama. Oh, he's constantly violating the Constitution. Really? Donald Trump has come out with 4 things. He has stated publicly that is his policy, his platform, his agenda, what he advocates, that are blatantly unconstitutional. I'm going to share them with you, but before I do, I want you to think to yourself, if you think it's unconstitutional, you hate it when Barack Obama does something unconstitutional. How the hell can you vote for somebody who does things that are unconstitutional or tells you he plans to when he gets in the White House? What kind of asinine thinking is that? Here's the things. Number one, close up the internet. I want to share with you the fact that in today's technological world, banning anything on the internet is the 2015 version of what would have been called book banning 30 or 40 years ago. Because 30 or 40 years ago, if you needed to find out, you wanted to find out something, you had to go get a book and read the book. Now we go on the internet. It is the modern equivalent of book banning, and that's what Donald Trump wants to do. Remember, we have to save our children. We're losing our children to the internet, right? We're losing our children to books. That's what he's saying. And by the way, I don't care about this Islamic thing. If I want to go on an Islamic site and look at an Islamic site, I want to be able to do that. I want my government to tell me that's not possible. Now, he also has suggested that American Muslims should have to carry some sort of different identification. Whoa, man, talk about mega unconstitutional. He also says that he would like to conduct surveillance of mosques without any articulatable suspicion. Wow, talk about a constitutional violation. And warrantless searches of mosques. Oh, he did throw in after that, that might be illegal. That might be illegal. You want to vote for a guy who says we should do this? And then, wait a second, that might be illegal. What an absolute knucklehead. Now, I want to share with you some of the excuses that Trump supporters give for supporting a guy who is about as dumb as a box of rocks and who has advocated four separate things that he wants to do when he gets in office, all of which are blatantly unconstitutional, which you hate when Barack Obama does it. Now, I love this one. Obama violates the Constitution too. No comment. This one. He doesn't intend to do those things. He's just saying it to get votes. Okay, let's break this one down for a second. What that means is the most important thing we have, politically speaking, that we have in our system of government is our vote. And in order to apply that vote correctly, we need to have honesty and forthrightness. And that is the core of our ability to exercise self-governance. But the people who want to are apologists for Trump are like, well, he's not really intending to do that. He's just saying it to get votes. Translation, he's intentionally, knowingly, and willfully lying to defraud people out of their votes. And people think that's a good thing. No wonder this nation's in such trouble with those kind of idiots. Now, all politicians lie. Okay? That's not true. Ron Paul didn't lie. But most politicians do lie. But here's the thing. We're not talking about a politician who's lying, although some people believe he is. We're talking about somebody who's going way beyond lying. He's advocating unconstitutional acts before he's even in office. Holy cow. Now, I discussed that people have taken an oath. Many people, such as myself, Bill Carnes, have taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. How can somebody who's done that turn around and vote for somebody who advocates freely without any concern? Oh, yeah, I want to do this. I want to do this. And it's unconstitutional. You know what somebody said to me? Well, my oath ended when I got out of the military. Yeah, very clearly. I also commented that I know two groups of people that support Donald Trump, those that are idiots and those that are fearful. And somebody wrote back, this is on Facebook, and this is how willing they are to lie. Okay, this gal wrote back and said, that's not true, I have an IQ of 160, blah, blah. Having an IQ of 160 would make her one of the 12 smartest people on the planet, okay? So she's so foolish, she doesn't even know what 160 IQ is. She's clearly lying about her IQ just to make a point that I'm somehow wrong when I say that people who support Donald Trump, one particular demographic that support him, are people with very low IQs. Again, just blatant lies. But if you're going to vote for somebody who advocates unconstitutional conduct, why not be a liar yourself? Hey, it makes sense to me. He's going to create jobs. Look, people, understand, Donald Trump went to private schools his whole life. His father was a multi-bajillionaire. He ended up at Wharton School of Business, where he has a degree in economics, most specifically tailored around real estate. That's why he went to Wharton. They have a real estate economics class. And then he got hundreds of millions of dollars from his father. If you went to private school and you graduated Wharton's business school and somebody gave you $100 million, it wouldn't be hard to make money, right? You'd actually pretty much have to be a stone idiot not to make money. Plus, when he gets in the White House, he's not in the private sector anymore, and government doesn't create any jobs. Zero. All you have to do is go read a book called The Freedom of Economics to find out how that kind of socialism fails dismally every time it's tried. He's going to protect us. from who? One individual said that it's not about fear-mongering. People aren't fearful who support Trump. And then he listed all these things that are happening. And when it was done, I responded to him and I said, do you realize after you said it's got nothing to do with fear, every single thing you listed could be summed up with this. People who aren't like me are gaining in numbers and perhaps influence. No, save me from that. That's fear. And that's a Trump supporter. I already covered that. I love this one. I haven't heard him say that. Why are you backing any political candidate if you're not following what they're saying? And, this one. If it's not going to be Trump, Hillary will win. Okay. Anybody who says that just lost their IQ test. Because let's say Donald Trump had a heart attack and died tomorrow. Do we imagine all the people who support Trump today would suddenly fall off the planet? No. They would turn to other Republican candidates and support them in its place. Plus, I will tell you this, some Republican candidates, one notable, might be able to bring some people across the aisle from the Democrat side. Donald Trump is exactly the opposite. He is going to repel, he repels me, he's going to repel a great number of Americans across the line away from the Republican Party. So in summary, oh, and one more. He's not a tough guy, okay? Just because you talk tough doesn't mean you're a tough guy. It means you're a demagogue. And when you're in the business section with millions of dollars, you can talk tough. It doesn't mean you can bring it home. We're out of time.
Thanks, Dave. We'll be back next. Let's fire it up and learn a thing or two. You know what really grinds my gears? Having a show called Totally Unprepared and bringing notes. Those are days.
Right on.
Now, what I want to talk about today is a lot of people don't seem to understand liberty. Talk about freedom all the time. Now, liberty and freedom are similar, but they are not synonymous. You hear people talking all the time, you know, I want freedom here, I want to be more free, free this, free that, free the other. Talking about their own, not free stuff on the store shelf. That comes with looting. Now, with freedom, and not really understanding liberty. If you notice, whenever you say the Pledge of Allegiance, it ends with liberty and justice for all. Why is freedom not mentioned in the Pledge of Allegiance? It's because freedom is very unbound. There's not a lot of boundaries to it. Liberty is really, it's much more structured. There's some ideals behind it. There's some principles. There's some reason. And there's some freaking respect behind liberty. Some respect which is commanded with liberty. With freedom, not so much. There's some 200, 210, something like that, separate countries and territories that basically, 195 of them refer to themselves as being free, when in fact we know that's not the case. The United States was commonly referred to as the freest nation in the world, which it's really not necessarily the case. The thing that we've always held structure to is liberty. Remember the Liberty Bell? Not the Freedom Bell, the Liberty Bell. Now, if you have liberty, with it comes freedom, all the freedom that you need. But with freedom, you don't necessarily have liberty or structure. I'll give you a perfect example. Mogadishu, Somalia is a free state. Somalia is a free country. The reason is there is no structured government there. It is lawlessness controlled by a whole bunch of warlords in various areas. But there's freedom. You can go down the street if somebody's in your way or just ticks you off. You can take out a gun, shoot them dead. Hey, you know what? There's freedom. You can get away with that. Because there's no police to do anything about it. Unless whoever you gun down happens to be a favorite of the warlord or one of their lieutenants, they might come looking for you. But that's actually a free society. But there's no liberty to it. Within that liberty, you can't really do what you need to do for your family unless it works within the warlord's provisions of the area in which you are or live. With that freedom that you have to go just about anywhere and do just about anything, you can trample across all kinds of other people, and you can step on or completely deny them their freedoms, their rights, their liberty. Now, that's not true freedom at all. True freedom comes from liberty. Liberty is respecting of other people's rights. Your free exercise of your rights, as long as your rights don't infringe upon the rights of someone else. You know, we're having a lot of this debate back and forth over Muslim this, Muslim that, Muslim the other. Anti-Muslim this, anti-Muslim that, anti-Muslim the other. When we discussed last week, as Dave brought up, we'll round it up to 20%. The true number is 19. But 20% of the world's Muslim population populate the Middle East, the Arab world, if you will. The other 80% are strong throughout the world in other areas. There's a big contingent in Africa. There's also a big contingent in the Southeast Asia and a lot of those island nations and such. There's the largest Islamic population in the world is concentrated in Indonesia, which is a massive country with tens of millions of people that are living there, all Muslims. They do not practice Sharia law. They are not these wild and crazily extremists that we're always talking about. The thing is you hear a lot of discussion about how to clamp down on the Muslims, how to deny the Muslims their ability to do things, how to raid mosques and these places of worship of all these Muslims. Here's the thing I want you to think about. Replace the word Muslim with the word Christian. That's what I want you to do when you hear these things. Replace mosque with church. And replace this, they're coming from overseas to come get us because they don't like us. And I want you to think of a couple of things. What I'm trying to do is get people to think here. You've got the United States of America that has no business having gone into Iraq at all. But we went in there, this weapons of mass destruction, all this stuff that was never found, nothing was there. And we have been trying to topple various dictators in that region of the world, matter of fact, successfully for some time. Look at what happened in Egypt recently, and the Muslim Brotherhood came in. We're trying to get rid of who was it? Assad in Syria. We got rid of Gaddafi in Libya, which Libya went from the highest standard of living in the entire Arab world to what is now essentially a dive. It's Watts. It's Detroit under fire. It's bad news. So it's South Central LA or the South Side of Chicago, if you will. That's really what it's turned into. From it used to be Brentwood and now it's Watts. It didn't do us any good. We've been meddling in that area with political aspirations of our own to try to get whatever it is we want, be it oil, energy. I don't even know what the hell we want over in the Middle East right now. But we've been meddling for so long, and then we throw armed troops in there. And at this point in Iraq in the last 13 years, have killed 1.2 million estimated civilians on top of all the war fighters, or they call them insurgents. Now imagine this. If America wasn't quite as militarily powerful as we are, maybe we didn't have quite as many natural resources as we do, and there were some other bigger countries out there. Let's say that Bangladesh was this gigantic country that had all of the power in the world and a lot of influence. The leader of the world, if you will, the way we speak of the United States. And Bangladesh decided to come into the United States for whatever their reasons were, armed, started going around the country, killing people by the tens of thousands as collateral damage, some directly. Pardon me. When they got us locked up, they're doing all kinds of crazy stuff to us. They're putting their own people in to run the government, which is a different system than what we agree with. But they're telling us it's we're here for your good. And they're oppressing us. And we're doing this for many years on end. And then we finally get pissed about it. So we start trying to get to the Bangladeshi people because of the Bangladeshi government. You might then see where we would consider them the invaders and we would consider them the problem because the Bangladeshi government in this scenario would be oppressing all of us and we would all be affected one way or another. Even if we supported what they were trying to do, there's got to be some things that they're getting done over here that we're just not digging. And a lot of too many people are dying over this. So we would not have liberty. We would not have freedom. They might be talking about it, but we wouldn't have it. And we would be pissed about their involvement. Now they want to ban Americans from going over there because Americans are pissed. Maybe they've had a few interactions with Canada as well, our neighbors up to the north, eh? And now they don't want to let Canadians in there because these Canadian insurgents have been coming down to the United States and helping us fight the Bangladeshi. Look, we have no business being in Iraq. If you could imagine having your home country invaded and controlled, the government change, and you being told what you've been doing for all of these decades, centuries, has been wrong, we're going to do something better for you guys. We're going to kill a couple million people in the process, but it's going to be better for you guys. How would you feel about it? Don't lie to yourself. Every single one of you watching this would not be happy. Not a one. Unless maybe you're a Bangladeshi descendant, and you think, eh, maybe that would be kind of cool here. Well, in that case, go back to Bangladesh, which is what we should be doing. We should be coming home and stop meddling over there. When you realize this is what's going on, and then we want to stop the free practice of the liberty-protected rights that others have in this country, you might realize where we're going wrong with all of this. We have caused this problem. Not we, you and I, or Dave Champion, or anybody in the studio here. We're talking about the government. The government that does things that we do not, as the governed, give them consent to do. We don't provide consent to our government to go into other countries and to start blowing things up and toppling dictators and putting in their own puppet governments. We don't approve of that. We don't even talk about that with our representatives in Congress. And it's not something you're ever going to hear a president bring up on a televised speech. They're not ever going to talk about it in their presidential speeches when they're running for the office when it comes up. It just doesn't happen. But that's exactly the sort of thing that's going on. Dave, what's the name of the operation from Cuba with the generals that wanted to cause things there?
I'm still stuck on Bangladeshi. Operation Northwoods.
Thank you. Operation Northwoods, where we got a bunch of these command-level generals that were trying to come up with the idea, actually had come up with the idea and the plans, to cause all sorts of terrorist-type events inside the U.S. borders that they could blame on Cuba. So that then we could, in the 60s, have an opportunity to go in there with tremendous support of the American people to go in there and go to war with Cuba and take out Fidel Castro. They actually had conspired to have in America, on our U.S. shores, American paid for and supported through shadow guys, you know, CIA spooks and such as that, actually doing these things. And it was John F. Kennedy, who had recently been elected as president, that put a stop to all this. He should have thrown them all in the clink and charged them with who knows how many myriads of federal offenses for this sort of thing. To even think about these things, bring them up, and have them laid out in plans on how they were going to do it. That's our own government. They govern by they operate by consent of the governed? That's bullshit. That is not the case that we have, and we haven't had in many, many decades. Those of you who fought in Vietnam, I got to tell you, you have a lot of my respect, but I have to tell you something else. The Gulf of Tonkin never happened. For whatever reason, the administration and those that paid their bills throughout the government, military, industrial complex, whatever their rationale for wanting to go in there was, they used the Gulf of Tonkin as an excuse to really start aggressive military actions there. And you were suckered into going over there fighting. 57,000 of you died over there on top of God knows how many Vietnamese.
2.3 million.
2.3 million. Thank you, Dave. This is the sort of thing that happens at our government level that we do not give consent for the government to do. This is why we need a massive change and to understand what liberty really is, not just freedom, because we can be free and oppressed. But if we have true liberty, we will not be oppressed. We will have freedom. We'll be able to exercise our rights. We don't have to worry about anybody else coming into our face and our homes and our communities and oppressing us and subverting our rights. Take this to the ballot box. Segment, and then I get the four.
Is that how that works?
That's how it works.
Okay.
Welcome back to segment four. This is where we talk about things that you guys email in, which we're actually going to get to a little bit today. Send us your emails, please, for all you viewers, to daveandbillshow@gmail.com, right there at the bottom of the screen. We love to hear from you guys. We had a couple folks last week. We had a challenge out there. What form of government do we have? And where is it listed in the Constitution? Had two people actually come in. Both of them were right. Article 4, Section 4. We are all guaranteed a Republican form of government. We are a republic. And to the republic to which it stands, not the democracy. We do not live in a democracy. It's a republic. Also, you can go online and look at, see all of our old shows, everything that we've done up to this point. And I have to now apologize. I was three shows behind when you put the last show up. So they're all up there now. All of the videos, all of the audio. And you can do that here at totallyunprepared.info. as a stocking stuffer. You can write totallyprepared.info on the back of any sheet of paper, post-it note, or business card and stick it in someone's stocking so that they can, oh, totally unprepared. What is that? They can go in there and learn about Bill and Dave and Totally Unprepared. So with that being said,
good idea.
There's been something that a paper that was written by a guy who was an economic journalist, I guess. Mm-hmm. It talked about the idea of the United States Treasury minting a $1 trillion coin, actually about 20 or so of them, that they could then, out of platinum, they could then send over to the Federal Reserve and say, here, under our authority, our constitutional authority, and with our laws, we can mint this $1 trillion coin. We're going to send them over to you to pay off the debt. Here you go.
Right.
So, Dave, you're very, very wise to these things.
Yeah.
So spit it, please.
There's so many different levels of this. First of all, the guy who was writing the article was opposed to the idea. He was commenting on the guy's idea. And the guy who originally had the idea had already criticized the author's not liking
it.
So they were ecstatic.
Exactly.
And of course, the law in question was originally designed for numismatic purposes. However, it doesn't say that. And the big struggle, sort of legally, was would the courts say that that was legal? And my answer is yes. The plain language of the statute does not state a reason for the Treasury to be able to issue those coins. If it doesn't state a reason,
court stops there.
That's right. So they could do it. Now, that's the legal side of things.
So really, what we're getting down to is the idea of the U.S. Mint, which is not part of the Federal Reserve System.
Right.
Minting
an agency
a solid platinum coin of whatever size they want, and then they notated on it that it's the value of it is $1 trillion. Or for that matter, it could be $100 trillion. It could mm-hmm. be a quintillion dollars. It doesn't matter. But they would have the authority to do that, and then that would have the full force and effect of currency. Now, that wouldn't be in circulation, but they could make, at this point, 19 of those and pay off our current debt.
They could put the coin right here. They could flip it to Yellen and say, you're paid up.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in theory, yes. But two things are true. First of all, if anybody really tried to make that happen, they would end up getting JFK'd. Because the bankers run things. They're not going to allow that to happen.
Yeah, and you're not going to get the Secretary of the Treasury in on that without it getting to the Federal Reserve, because the Federal Reserve has one position on their board of directors reserved for
the Secretary,
Secretary of the Treasury, the Treasury of the United States.
And in addition to that, most of the guys in the Senate and the House who are senior, who've been there a while, have clout, who control, you know how that works.
They're
control
in the pocket.
Yep. They know that the bankers are in control. So if anybody even started to go down this road, other than an economist commenting on it in an article, anything more than that, trying to place that into real world application, anything from you won't be getting in office next time because we'll dump $100 million on your competitor's campaign to you're going to end up laying right next to JFK.
They just change the law, because that's in the U.S. code, right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Congress could all Congress have to do is for the sole purpose of numismatic coin. That would take that statute right out of the play. Right. So they influence those members of the Senate and the House that I was talking about. They amend the statute and it's over. So it's a great idea. It's one of those things. It's like, oh, that's cool. And in the real world, never happened.
All right, let's talk about an Uber driver in Chicago.
Yes.
That used his concealed weapons permit, his handgun,
yep.
to stop a guy that was randomly shooting a bunch of people on the street.
Now, I think this story has two great aspects to it. Number one, it happened in Chicago, the
Excellent.
Home of perhaps the strictest gun control in America. And number two, one of the things that anti-gunners say, which makes me nuts, is that people with concealed firearms cannot stop active shooters, cannot stop violent suspects, and if they try, they're going to end up shooting a bunch of innocent people.
It happens a couple million times a year by most estimates.
Exactly. I just had a guy comment. I posted a video of a guy doing exactly that in a liquor store, right? The bad guy turned around to herd some other people away. The guy got his gun out, pat, pat, capped him, right?
Yeah.
And people say, Where's all the other, you put up one example, where's all the others? You're the people who don't believe you can do it. Like, talk about cognitive dissonance. Go to YouTube. There's only thousands upon thousands
yeah,
upon thousands upon thousands.
Yeah, go do the research yourself, for God's sake. Don't make your laziness my problem.
Right. So the great part of this story is that it happened in Chicago, and it yet again yet again for the, you know, I don't know, 50,000th time probably this year, shows somebody doing it successfully. And Uber driver sitting in his car. Group of people are walking along. I presume the Uber driver was in an area where there's a bunch of people, right? That's where people who are taxi Uber type people want to be, right? To get fares. And some guy pulls out a gun and starts shooting the crowd. He gets out of his car. Boom, 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 boom. Caps the guy. No innocent people hit, because that's the claim of anti-gunners, that the law-abiding guy is going to shoot all the innocent bystanders, right? No innocent bystander shot. Took the gunman out of play. Police came, put him in an ambulance. Well, he's alive and he's going to stand trial. And the Chicago police said the guy had a lawful CCW and he acted to defend the lives of the innocent. No charges in Chicago.
It's got to piss Rahm Emanuel off. And I got to tell you, the beauty of this is he is not just an armed citizen. He's a responsible armed American adult.
Yeah, he could have driven away.
He could have driven away. And the reason I say responsible is not only did he have the gun, Dave, the guy knew how to deploy it. Understood how to get his hits on target in a stressful environment. The guy obviously had some kind of training. You don't just buy a gun and that crap happens.
Right.
It does not happen like that. You've got to know how to use it. It's like buying a guitar and somebody says, now you're gonna do a riff, right? I don't know what to do. I just bought the guitar. I just carry the guitar in a case around with me.
Ping!
Yeah, exactly. That's the same effect. If you buy a gun, you never knew how to use it. So good on him. We had a listener, Dave, sent us in an email that complimented us on our show of last week, which, you know.
Thank you.
Good job, buddy.
Yeah.
So he also asked where we tend to go to get our news and information on a daily or weekly basis. He thought that some of the other viewers might want to know.
Wow, that's an all-over-the-map kind of question as far as the answer is concerned. I search each day various websites, and the way I refer to these is I call these portals. I tend to go to the places where you can start drilling down through the stories. The examples of those would be things like CNN and Drudge, okay? Drudge being an aggregator. CNN, of course, is almost an aggregator in that you can find many of the same stories you find on Drudge, but they've got a CNN byline.
Okay? Sure.
But, of course, Drudge has a lot of stories you would never, ever see. But anyway, one of these portals. And one of the interesting things that happens is, and I'm sure you've experienced this, when I go to read an article, there's other articles listed on the side. So oftentimes I end up going down the rabbit hole because I'm reading the article. Okay, I got the gist of this. Oh, that looks interesting. And, of course, most of the stuff I'm looking at is either personal interest to me or some sort of liberty-based thing. And the other great place, and I think people don't understand how powerful a tool this is Facebook. Not Facebook per se. It is what people are interested in and post. I cannot tell you how many excellent articles I have found posted on Facebook from local publications or things that are not mainstream, they're not dominant media. But people have posted them, and they're fabulous articles about very meaningful subjects. But if you went to these large aggregators or these portals, as I call them, you would never find these stories. But somebody will have it. Let's say somebody's favorite news site is, you know, XYZ news site. It's not something
that's
I would look
one,
at.
By the way.
Yes, not something I would look at or you would look at, but it's their favorite. And day after day after day, they may enjoy it. But then there's this one story.
There's one gem. There's a diamond in the rough.
And they throw it up on Facebook. And I pull up the article and I read it. One of the other things I want to say about articles, not so much just where you find them. Read them till the very last. If an article is like 22 paragraphs, read it to the last like three paragraphs. And the reason is I have found that one of the things the dominant media does, they give you what they want you to know up front, what they want you to know, the part they want you to hear. Normally in the last three or four paragraphs, you find out all the rest of the detail that changes your opinion about the whole story.
Sure.
Because they'll include the facts, but they're going to be at the very bottom knowing that probably 98% of the readers will never get that far. So that's an important thing to do. Always read the stories all the way through. What about you?
You know, I'm very similar. I mean, I'll read things on various social media, and I'll get an idea of it, and I'll click on a link, I'll read it, and oftentimes you're seeing basically an editorial, an opinion piece, masked as journalism.
Yes.
And if it's interesting enough, I will search it, and I will read two or three other articles on it to really kind of get a better idea. Now, oftentimes the articles are the same. Somebody put it out there, it got put out into the area. Like, when the U.S. Supreme Court gave their decision in the McDonald v. Chicago case. Mm-hmm. I actually wrote an opinion piece on it. And I got it in the hands of a publishing company, a publicist, if you will. And what they did, they put it everywhere. And that opinion piece was published in, I think it was about 300 different areas, including Forbes, USA Today, CNN, Fox. Everybody picked up mine. Now, I had to pay to get that done. But I wanted my name out there, that this is my opinion of it. And it got picked up by Agency Have Film. So go through, and other people can do that. So sometimes you find three or four that's basically the same story, crediting the same source. Mm-hmm. I try to find various areas of that if it's something that's truly interesting. And, you know, try to source it a little bit and find out what's going on. So there's not just any one place or another. I know you like Drudge is one of your home bases.
One of my portals.
And, you know, one of mine is actually Fox News, because they'll put up different variations of something that, say, CNN might put up. Mm-hmm. They have different aspects of it. I like to read them both.
I would also comment that one of the things that, for me, makes the news stories more compelling and interesting is to connect the dots between what happened yesterday, a month ago, 6 months ago, a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and see how they all interconnect over time. To read stories, I got this one, okay, we're done. I got this one, I'm done. It renders the entire process almost meaningless if you cannot connect the dots at the end.
It does. By the way, we may or may not be here next week. It'll be just a day or two before Christmas. And if we're not here, Merry Christmas, but we'll see you next time.
See you soon.